Good morning. It's 7:22.
Well, it is 40 years to the day since the landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion, the Roe versus Wade decision. And while the ruling remains intact, the debate continues to rage. Joining us live is Paul Rothstein. He's professor of law at Georgetown University's Law Center. Professor, always great to have you with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike and Bruce. Good to talk with you.
Same here. What about this issue here of the way states are approaching it now? States are feeling that perhaps the Supreme Court is not going to issue anything that might undermine Roe v. Wade, so they're going to try to do what they can. What kind of legal parameters do they work within?
Well, there are seven restrictions on the full right to an abortion that states today are enacting into law. They surround things like ultrasound, requiring that women who want an abortion listen to an ultrasound or look at an ultrasound picture of the fetus or listen to the heartbeat of the fetus. Then there's restrictions on insurance coverage for abortion, certain age limits below which the right to an abortion would be restricted, requirements of parental involvement below a certain age before a youngster can have an abortion. Then there are late-term bans on abortion after, for example, 18 or 20 weeks, restrictions on that, mandatory counseling before a woman has an abortion, and then regulations, sometimes very strict regulations about what clinics that do abortions have to have, and some clinics can't comply, and so clinics are going out of the business.
You know, there's a new NBC Wall Street Journal poll, NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, that shows for the first time that a majority of Americans believe that abortion should be legal in most cases. 70% don't want the Roe v. Wade decision overturned. But I wonder if that even has any bearing on what these state legislatures are doing and the ability of Roe v. Wade to survive.
A case after Roe versus Wade in the Supreme Court did hold in 1992, and that's the Casey case, that reasonable restrictions that don't put a, quote, undue burden, unquote, on the right to an abortion are okay. So nobody knows what exactly that means, so that some of these seven kinds of restrictions that states are enacting might be okay, but the people who are in favor of broad abortion rights are afraid to take some of these restrictions in the states to the Supreme Court to have them declared unconstitutional because they're afraid that since the court personnel, the judges, have changed since Roe versus Wade, they're afraid that that there might be a decision coming out of the Supreme Court, if they take it to the Supreme Court, a decision that would be very much against the rights that Roe versus Wade has provided. So they're afraid that it might come out anti-abortion rights.
Now, let me ask you, do the members of the Supreme Court watch all of these lower decisions in the state? Or does something have to come to the Supreme Court in the form of some kind of appeal or challenge before they could look at it and say whether or not this conforms to Roe v. Wade?
There has to be an appeal or challenge. And quite frankly, some of these seven restrictions on abortions that the states are enacting are meant by some of their sponsors to stimulate a Supreme Court case and get it into the Supreme Court because they feel that they might get a really favorable decision cutting way back on Roe versus Wade or overruling Roe versus Wade, which is what some of them really want. Some other people that are behind these restrictions have different motivations. Some think that these restrictions are genuinely good on their own merits. Some people just want to chip away at Roe versus Wade, but maybe not overrule it completely. But some people behind these restrictions really, really want to overturn Roe versus Wade fully.
I appreciate the explanation. Good to talk to you again, Professor.
Thanks.
Georgetown Law Professor Paul Rothstein with us.